This morning I want us to think of this subject, lessons from nature and history. Matthew chapter 24, verses 32 through 42, which have to do with signs of the fulfilling of signs. You know, we've noticed the answer that Jesus has given to the disciples' question of when shall these things be and what shall be the sign of thy coming. We have noticed how Jesus has answered these questions. First of all, when shall these things be? That has to do with the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. And Jesus tells them that when you'll see in verse 15 the abomination of desolation, then it's time to abandon the city and go to other parts of the world. And Titus destroyed Jerusalem in 70 A.D., and this is about 35 or 40 years after Jesus said these things, and the Jews were dispersed over all the known world, Europe and everywhere, and they weren't regathered until 1945 when they began to again reassemble. What shall be the sign of thy coming, and that is of thy body presence? When will you come back to this earth? We know that Jesus started telling them these things in verse 29 when he says immediately after the tribulation of those days. So he begins to give signs which have to do with the sun being darkened and the moon not giving her light and stars falling and powers of the heavens being shaken. So we're going to know that things are being put in place for the appearance of Christ when we see phenomenon occurring in the heavenly bodies. There will be some movement on earth, such as earthquakes, which will contribute to volcanic action, which will cause perhaps the darkening of the sun, which would cause then the moon to lose her light. These are just things that I am conjecturing about, so we cannot tell you exactly how Jesus will bring these things to pass, but we know that they will come to pass. Now Jesus speaks in verse 32 concerning lessons from nature. Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, you know that summer is nigh. Now, oftentimes people have said that that is a symbol of Israel's regathering, and it isn't. Jesus is saying, when you look at a fig tree, you assume that if it is leafing out, then that will let you know that the time of summer is very close, because the fig tree leafing was usually the last tree to put out leaves. After it leafed, then summer was nigh. It's like some of the trees in our area. There are trees that bud first and leaf first, and then there are some that don't until late in spring. And when these late budding trees are leafed out, then you know that it's time to do things that are connected to spring and summer. My father always said that when the hickory trees had a leaf as big as a squirrel's ear, then it was time to plant the garden. Now, that was just an old-timer sign of things as they looked at trees and leaves and flowers and things of that nature. So Jesus is saying, learn something from nature. You read signs all the time. You are taught by signs all the time. So when you see that a fig tree, when its branch is tender, putting out buds, and leaves are coming forth, then you know that summer is close. Now, how did he apply that? What application did he make? He states, so likewise. That is, learning a lesson from nature about how near summer is. When you shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. Now, what's he talking about when he says, when you see all these things? Well, he's talking about, first of all these things that have to do with the coming of the destroyer and the destruction of Jerusalem. When you see all these things of kingdom rising against kingdom and nation against nation, when you see all these things happening that I predicted, then you know that Jerusalem is near to its destruction. Also, when you see all these signs happening of the moon and the stars and these things occurring, know that I am near, even at the door. What he's saying is, look at all the signs, and then you know I'm close. Look at all the signs again, and you'll know that I'm close. In other words, this truth applies to all the prophecies concerning the destruction of Jerusalem. This illustration of truth applies to all that's happening for the end times, just before the appearance of Jesus. Now notice, verily that it is even at the doors, that is, it's ready to happen. If someone's at the door, it means they're ready to walk in and the occurrence take place. So when these disciples saw the wars and rumors of wars and the persecution that came to them and false prophets and people abandoning Christianity because iniquity was abounding, and then finally they saw the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, they knew that all this had occurred. Well, now when if we begin to see signs in heaven, we begin to see some things that have not occurred, maybe the movement of the planets or huge comets or anything of that nature, then you know that Christ, the prophecies concerning it, that when the heavens are shaken, it's not going to be some small issue. You're going to know about it. Then you can begin to say, the Lord is at the door. It's very, very close. Now, I know this is not what you've probably heard all your life, but what I try to do is take the Bible and use the tools of interpretation and arrive at the conclusions using the Bible to answer the questions. When I do that, this is what I come up with. So I'm not just reading a few scriptures here and a few scriptures there and putting a patch quilt together of a patchwork theology so that I can make the quilt fit. I'm trying to make my interpretation fit the scriptures rather than scriptures fit my interpretation. Do you see the difference? People form an idea and then take scriptures and make them fit. I don't want to do that. I want to take the scriptures and let them say what God wants them to say. And so that's what I read, and that's how I understand these scriptures. Now, verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. Now, you say, well, that means Jesus would come in that generation. No. It means that Jerusalem would be destroyed in that generation, okay? That generation of people, those people who were hearing him, that generation would not be gone from the earth until Jerusalem would be destroyed and everything would occur. Not talking about his second coming. He's answering now question number one, okay? And he's telling Andrew and Peter, James, and John, you guys are not going to be dead, or at least your contemporaries, you may be, but the contemporaries, your generation, will be alive when Jerusalem is destroyed. He's not saying they'll be alive whenever Jesus comes again. In fact, if you'll read Acts chapter 1, you'll see that these people, when they ask the question, Lord, wilt thou at this time restore the kingdom? Jesus says, it's not for you to know. That is to experience. You're not going to experience it. He's flatly denied that they would not be alive when he came again. But they would be alive when all of these things from verse 4 through verse 28, they'd be alive when these things occurred. Now, but my words shall not pass away. What's he saying? All these things are going to come to pass. Everything that I've said will be fulfilled in its time frame that I have spoken it to you. So my words are truth. You can depend on these things. Now, but of that day and hour knoweth no man. No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Now, what is it that no one knows the day and the hour? It is the bodily appearing of Christ. It is then the sounding of the trumpet. Nobody knows the hour and nobody knows the day, but God's people who understand Scripture can know the season. Okay? Just because we know the season doesn't mean we know the hour. I don't know when the first snowflake will fall. I don't know when the first frost will be. But after, you know, late October and I see the different things happening, then I don't know the day and the hour, but I know the season. I don't know when the temperature is going to get 100 degrees again, but I'm not expecting it this month. It's looking like it might be, and the way things are changing. But I know from my experiences that it'll probably be in July or August, okay? So I know the season, but I don't know the day of the hour. Will it be July the 4th at 12 o'clock? Will it be July 26th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? I don't know, but I know that's about the season. Why? Because that's when it has happened. Now, if you begin to see some rather strange and extraordinary things occurring in the heavens with the stars and the moon and the sun and things of that nature, then you know that is a sign that the season has begun, okay? We don't know the hour and we don't know the day, because if we did, we'd know more than angels know. And I don't believe a man knows more than an angel knows who's in the presence of God all the time. So when some person tells you they know when Jesus is coming again, they are telling you a lie. They do not know. We know the season. We don't know the day or the hour. Now, but what about, now he's going to describe from history the attitude of the people, even with all these things going on. What will be the attitude of the people? You say, well, if there are some really extraordinary things occurring and we're looking at comets and we're looking at the sun and we're looking at the stars and we're saying what's happening, and we're seeing these on our daily news broadcasts, and we're talking about these things in talk shows about what all's happening and see, you know, what's going on, I guess the whole world is going to start looking for Jesus. No. And he uses a historic circumstance. He said, as it was in the days of Noah, you know, for 100 years or more, or however how long, we don't know for sure, 140, whatever, Noah told people that there was going to be a great flood. And he began to build an ark. Did it change the way people lived? Did they all start building an ark and get excited about this terrible flood that's going to come and cover the entire earth? What happened to the contemporaries of Noah? Did they all believe what he said and get excited about what was going on? No. What happened? Life went on as usual. Well, when all of these things are occurring, such as the phenomenon in heaven and earth that we're talking about, powers being shaken, the earth being shaken, which evidently earthquakes, when these things are occurring and they're strange and odd and people are talking about it, what's going to happen? Well, let's see. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, what? Until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away. Now notice, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. That's not applying then to the destruction of Jerusalem, is it? We're not talking about destruction of Jerusalem. We're talking about what? The appearing of Jesus. So what's going to happen? What people are going to be making plans to get married. They're going to be making plans to send the kids to college. They're going to be making plans to pay the house off, buy a new house. In other words, commerce, economy, social circumstances are going to go on just like they always have. That is, people will accept this as a threat or as a change, but it's not going to really change them any. It's not going to really excite them any. Why? Because the only people going to be saying anything about it is a bunch of dumb people like me and you. Just a bunch of cult-led, fed ignoramuses who get excited about para stuff, you know, paramental or whatever you want to call it. How can you believe that those people, they don't have any proof, you know? Where's the promise of his coming? You know what I'm talking about? These people are going to be not skeptical. They're going to be beyond skepticism. And you're going to say, look, you know that new star we found or that new comet we're looking at, these new movements of the earth tilting a little more or whatever. Somebody said, what's that mean? Don't mean nothing. You know, that mean anything. To me, it means something, see. It is that budding of the fig tree. It is that fig tree putting forth its branch, okay? Now, I'm not saying that the regathering Israel was not a truly momentous fulfillment of prophecy. It was. But when we say that happened just before Jesus comes again, I think it happens before Jesus comes again, but not just before Jesus comes again, okay? We're looking for these other things to occur. Now, then shall two, in other words, here's the way it's going to fall out. They're going to be just like Noah. They knew not until what? The flood came and took them all away. So what's going to happen? Well, just like the flood came and took all of them away, Jesus is going to come and take all of his people away. Okay? Now notice. Then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken, the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken, and the other left. In other words, Jesus is going to come, and he's going to catch his people away at the beginning of this phenomenon, rather than in the midst of it when perhaps all of the extra serious problems occur. There will be some tribulation. There will be some persecution, probably. But before it gets to be the great time of Jacob, the great disturbance, I believe God's going to take his people out, okay? Now, does this square with anything that we've learned from other scriptures? And I want to talk about this taking away phenomenon that I have mentioned. The two shall be in the field, two shall be in the grinding at the mill. One's going to be taken, and the other's going to be taken out of the way. Let's turn to 1 Thessalonians 4. I'll give you a little bit of time. Take me a little time, too. 1 Thessalonians 4. And let's just look at verse 13. You hear this read at funerals all the time. And this is not a funeral. It may have some corpses, but we're not celebrating it, okay? But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep, that you sorrow not, even as others which have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. That is, God will bring them with Jesus. For this we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that is, Jesus taught me this, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not prevent, that is, go before, precede, them which are asleep, that is, the dead Christians. Here's the way it is. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. That is, they'll receive their glorified body, be just exactly what mother and dad were when you placed them in the ground, or when that boy was lost at sea, or whatever happened to all the people that were saved. Going to raise them up. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. Wherefore what? Comfort or encourage one another with these words. Now let's look at 1 Corinthians 15, just right after Acts. Book of 1 Corinthians, verse 15. I don't want to see you to see how this all works, okay? We're looking at verse 51. It's a real long chapter here in the 15th chapter. And this is just ending some of the talks about a discussion about the resurrection and all this stuff. In verse 51, Paul says, "Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep," that is, all the people who are living on the earth will not all die, "but we shall all be changed," that is, all those who are dead will be changed and all the living will be changed, "in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye." And the word that's translated "twinkling of an eye" is atom. And an atom was, to the Greeks, a unit of measure that had shrunk so minute by cutting it in half it could never be divided again. For instance, we got a distance here, okay? All right, that's half the distance, okay? Now that's half of the distance again, see? All right, now I'm going to measure this half a distance, okay? Now I'm going to measure this half a distance. Now I'm going to measure this half. See what I'm talking about? Now, an atom is when I get to the point that I couldn't ever cut it in two again, okay? So, in a moment, that means the quickest amount of time you could imagine. So, if you're these two at the mill, they ain't going to have time to say, "Well, I'll see you later. You know, I feel a change coming on." Okay? I mean, they're gone. Now, if you and I are alive when Jesus comes back, you're not going to die. Okay? You say, "Well, how quick am I going to get out?" That quick. Even quicker than that, okay? You're going to be changed. You will change from this body that you're in right now to a body that is like the body of Jesus. It's totally glorified. You won't even need your heart pump anymore. You see what I'm talking about? You will have a heart. I hope you do. Well, but no. You are fed from the essence of God Himself, okay? And you will never be subject to death or pain or suffering or anything else. And the minute that you're changed, in that same instant, you'll be in the presence of the resurrected, glorified saints. That in that quick amount of time, you're going to see all of your people who are dead saved, okay? Now, you're going to be on earth. You might be washing the dishes or using a scrub brush on the commode. I don't know, whatever it is. But when Jesus comes and the time is right, from that to being in the presence of Jesus and the presence of all of God's saints, it's going to happen that quick, okay? See, this is called the blessed hope. You know why? We don't have to die. See, we hope the Lord will come back and we don't ever have to die. We just changed in a fraction of a second so that we're now in bodies that are not subject to death, sin, sickness, or anything else. Just that quick. So it's called the blessed hope. That's something that gives you comfort and joy to hope for, see, that you won't ever have to die like other people have died. Now, these are just some of the verses that speak of it, and I think that time frame is the one that is here in the book of Matthew that we're studying. So we have something really to look forward to. Okay, now knowing all this, okay, what kind of people should we be? Okay, that's what we're going to look at next Sunday. Knowing all these things, what kind of people should we be? Then he's going to describe what it's like and tell the parable of 10 virgins, okay? 5 are ready and 5 are not ready, see? Then he's going to tell us about occupy till I come. You know, what are we going to do till in the meantime? Well, we're going to go in business. And that's what the word occupy means, go in business. I'm going to give you a bunch of money, put you in business, and tell you to do what I've said for you to do, and then I'm going to come back and you're going to have to account for what I did. What you did with the money that I gave you. See, that's where men you are right now. We're going to learn where men you are right now in relation to the coming of Christ. He's not here. Maybe there's signs of His coming. So what are we doing? We're in business for Jesus. We're trying to use the talent, quote, money. That's what a talent means, money. Bucks, $1,000 bill. He gave some $5,000, some $10,000, some $2,000, and said, "I want you to use this for my to get an investment, get a return out of it." Well, you remember the guy had 2 talents? He went and hid it because he said, "Boy, God's so tough, He'll just get rough with me if I lose it." So he didn't do anything, and the Lord dealt with him pretty severely, didn't he? So that's where me and you are right now. This is the interesting stuff that tells you where you are right now, okay, and where this church is right now.